If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
In this edition of the Mailbag, we build our best ever offense from Texas Tech history. We talk about which team has better position groups, 2017 or 18. We talk about the possibility of playing without some key players on defense. Why there are so many different polls in baseball, and a very deep hypothetical question that had Michael and Spencer stumped. This is the Mailbag edition of the 23 Personnel Podcast, and it starts right now. You are listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast, where food and sports clash at the goal line. Here are your hosts, Spencer and Michael. All right, everybody, welcome to the Mailbag edition of the 23 Personnel Podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, joined by Michael.
Hello again.
Yeah, so we previewed some of the questions in the regular episode right there at the very end. We got a handful of great questions. We're just going to kick it right off. I'm going to let Michael start this one, but it's pick five wide receivers, one running back, and one quarterback from Tech history. Go.
Okay, do you think I should just list them all off and then you can dissect them later or what? Or should we go like...
I will tear your list apart name by name. So why don't you go ahead and start? No, I'm kidding. I don't know what your list is yet.
Okay. I was in Dallas this weekend and I visited my friend Adam and we went to a Foo Fighters concert, which that's neither here nor there other than just to interject that in the conversation because it was awesome. But as soon as you sent that to me, we were having dinner and I asked him about it and we kind of came up with very similar answers. So I'll just kind of go through mine and then I'll share where I differ from him. But anyway, quarterback, and just for you guys listening, I'm not going to go back to like Zebby Lethridge or something. You know, I'm going to,
yeah, me neither.
I'm going to stick with who I know. I'm going to stick with who I've kind of gotten to see personally as a fan. So,
and having said that, this one's going to be pretty easy to pick for both of us.
Yeah, so apologies to the historical guys out there who's hollering, why don't you pick Billy Joe Tolliver? All right. You know, based off of what I saw at Tech, how well everything went, with him at the helm, I'm going Graham Harrell. That's who
wow.
I'm going.
Okay. Not where I thought you were going to go with that. So I was going to ask, are we taking into account the team's performance for those teams, like for those years? Like,
I think your
metric...
Are we
looking at individual...
I think your metric is up to you.
Because if we're looking at individual performance, quarterback is no question for me. It's Patrick Mahomes.
I agree.
But the team did not perform very well in his years. And we were just going through Tech history from like 2013 between episodes. We're like, there's a lot of heartache in here. Especially we were talking about 2016 in particular. We're like, you had no idea what this team was.
A lot of heartache in here.
You had like a lot of games like you were close. You're within a touchdown of Kansas State. And then you get blown out at home by West Virginia like by 30 points. And then you have that game against Oklahoma where you're just trading, you know, touchdown drives all night, you know, the 66-59 game. Then you follow that up with a trip to Iowa State and lose by 56. So it's like you just had no idea who you were that year. So, and obviously that was a year that you had Patrick Mahomes as quarterback. So if I'm looking at individual performances, it's no question for me would be Patrick Mahomes. Team-wise,
I can't fault you for that. But
if we're looking at team performance, again, obviously it would be Graham Harrell.
Yeah.
Because nobody else did what he did with the team.
Well, and to be fair, too, Harrell also had Michael Crabtree to throw to. You know, Mahomes didn't have a guy like that. And of course.
He had more of a much rounder set of guys around him besides just one superstar.
Right. Whereas Mahomes was the superstar on his team. I mean, by far, he was like supernova. But that was just kind of, I don't know. That's where I came up with my conclusion of just, you know, Harrell ended up with, gosh, of course he played another year, or a year longer than Mahomes, and definitely started more games by far. But he ended up with almost 16,000 yards. You know, I know Crabtree caught a lot of them.
For a 4-year average, which he didn't, you know, he didn't start a full 4 years. That's 4,000 plus yards a year.
Right.
And he started, what, 3 years?
Or three, yes.
And change. So he was averaging 5,000 plus for 3 years, which is a lot of yards.
I think 06 was when he first started, because I remember, I think that was when we really laid an egg in Colorado or something awful. We always did. Missouri, one of those, was so always just
my,
a...
My freshman year was 2007, and we were home against Colorado, and I think he threw 4 interceptions in that game.
Was that the one where we flipped off the fans?
I think so. Because I'm pretty sure we were booing him hard.
Well, I don't know. I as great as Mahomes was, it's not fair to the kid. It just kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
He had trash offensive lines. Yeah, he didn't have very good offensive lines.
How many losses we had? You know, how many games we didn't win? We just weren't a good team. It's not his fault. It's really not. But I just
also, you know, as a Harrell superstar, he wasn't able to elevate the team around him.
Right, and but that's at some point that's the coach's job too. I mean, he's got to rely on who he's got, and he's got guys dropping passes that were starting the year that were at the end of the bench at the end of the year and or transferred. So I mean, that's who he was throwing to.
To be fair, I make that point. We have no idea of saying the guys around him weren't actually any good without Mahomes. You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't know that Mahomes didn't make them better.
Right.
Because maybe those years without Mahomes, we're looking at like 3-9 and 4-8 seasons instead of there's a 7-5, there's an 8-5. Although that wasn't Mahomes, that was Davis Webb and
well, that was
Baker,
the freshman.
Anyways,
that's my quarterback. Okay, all right. Okay, you ready for running back?
Yeah, and I think we're because of our pre-record discussion. I think we're gonna differ here, but
I'm going with DeAndre Washington.
Hard to fault you on that one.
That's who I would pick. I loved watching him run. He ended his career here at Tech with just 8 yards shy of 1,500. Oh, no. That was the 2015 year. Sorry.
Yeah, that was just one season.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Yeah, that was his last year where he just mowed everybody over, so...
And there's always one play that comes to mind. It was that 80-yard touchdown against Kansas State where he just, like, he made people look silly, and he was outrunning people at 80 yards. Like, at the end of a run, he's still outrunning people.
Yeah. And, you know, he's still playing today. So, I mean, that's who I pick for running back. What about you?
So, here's the thing. I never saw him play in person. He predates my Texas Tech fandom. But doing research and looking into it, my choice for running back was Byron Hansbard.
Oh, it is?
Mm-hmm.
You're going because old school.
Yeah, a little bit. Because of he's the school's only Doak Walker Award winner, which is the best running back in the country. Again, this was a Spike Dykes team, so this was much more heavy oriented run team than, you know, obviously Leach ever was. DeAndre Washington was a close second because again that was the other really successful back that I've seen.
Right.
I mean, I've watched Shannon Woods, Baron Batch, Eric Stevens,
Torian Henderson.
I didn't ever see Torian Henderson.
Oh, that's right.
That was right before me. But so that's where I was going with running back. I don't have any other way besides just historically, his numbers were impossible to argue with, and of course winning that national award.
He's got, speaking of numbers, I've got some good ones for you here to back you up. Byron Hansbard appears 1, 2, 3, 4 times on the single game rushing records at Texas Tech.
And which records are those?
And they are all in, 3 of them are in the year 96 and 1 of them is in 95. And so, all right, here we go.
No, I know that one of them is not going to be most yards in a game because that was DeAndre Washington, wasn't it? Or most touchdowns or something? Like
I think he had most touchdowns. He had something else. But no, most attempts maybe?
No, I thought it was a game against Kansas State at home in his senior year where he like either tied or broke the rushing, like single game rushing. I mean, and again, that's not like a super, you know, high feat for a Texas Tech running back.
Okay, he made the list, but he's number 7.
Well, then I don't know what I'm talking about. Go ahead.
It was, okay, so Byron Hansbard at number 8. He had 247 yards and 96 against Southwestern Louisiana. And then at number 5, he had 260 yards against Air Force. And then 96 again. He had 272 yards against Oklahoma State. 272, my friend. That's number 3 on the list. And then number 1 on the list, he had 287 yards against Baylor in 96. But yeah, DeAndre Washington had 248 against Kansas State in 2015, and that puts him at number 7. I do kind of remember something coming up on that. I think they were, yeah, because he passed, you know, Hansbard had 247. So he passed him when he got on that list. But yeah, Hansbard shows up 4 times. That's pretty good.
Yeah, so looking at, yeah, you said 248, 2015 against Kansas State.
Yeah.
DeAndre Washington comes in number 5 for single season yards, 1492. But in that 1996 year for Byron Hansbard, he had just a few yards shy of 2,100.
Yeah, that's a slight difference. Yeah, actually, I can't.
DeAndre Washington
can't
was on that
on
single
this.
Season list twice.
Yeah.
He was on there 5 and 10. Rushing yard career, DeAndre Washington ended up 5th at 3,400. Hansbard was 1st at 4,200. So.
All right, you ready to run through some receivers?
Yeah.
All right. You'll never guess my first one, Michael Crabtree.
He's also on my list. Let's get that out of the way.
Did he make your list?
Number 1 is like if we're drafting all-time receivers, he's my first pick.
Yeah, he's at the top of a lot of lists. He had 134 receptions in 2007,
which is a lot.
You know what else is crazy is that second place is Amendola with 109 same year.
I'm about to say also in 2007. So that year must have been like nobody was catching year. The ball besides Crabtree and Amendola.
Yeah, that's how I remember it.
But then, like, okay, so you think about how crazy. Okay, it in my mind, 2007, it was everything went to Crabtree, right? He had 134 receptions, and then to your point, Amendola also had 109 that year. When we think back to like Jason Morrow, who's the next on that list for single season receptions, like 2013 with the freshman quarterback, so like everything went to Jason Morrow. He had 106.
Yes.
So he was below Amendola on the 2007 team, who also had a Crabtree on that team.
Man, this is why, you know, seeing those Jason Morrow stats, of course, you know, I don't want to put too much pressure on Dante Thompson, but seeing a big tight end be an option this year, it kind of makes me excited because if they can catch, you kind of just throw it around them and they'll grab it and get you down the field a little bit. So, anyway, that said, Crabtree's my number one.
Okay,
why don't you go next? Why don't you start you go with the receiver.
So I was going to bring it back to, okay, that 2007 year with Crabtree, he had nearly 2,000 receiving yards on 134 catches. Danny Amendola also made the single season receiving yards list for 2007 at 1245. So there were 3,100 yards between two receivers.
Yeah.
That year.
That's pretty stacked. I bet you they make our list.
Probably. No, I don't know about Amendola. I'm sorry. I'm kind of waffling back and forth on this one. I don't know if I should take both of them, like draft style, or just pick one and deal with it. I'm going to go with Jakeem Grant.
Okay. I agree with that.
So he's a number two for me.
I had, this is where, man, Adam, you'll have to forgive me if you're listening, because we'd had some beers and I can't remember where we differed on this. But this is where we differed. I really wanted Grant on the list, and he didn't have Grant on his list. But I just can't get over. I can't remember who we had other than Grant. So sorry, I'm butchering that. But Grant, man, I just can't get over how fast he was.
So shifty.
Yeah, and the way he was able to return kicks and punts, mm-hmm. and I mean, I know that you're asking for receivers, but hey, if he's a receiver on your team and can return punts, then he's your punt returner too. So, I mean, that made a lot of a difference to me. But just that speed, I can't imagine having to guard him, having to hope that he doesn't just blow by you on every single play. And the fact that he's, you know, gone on to play in the NFL, that makes mm-hmm. a lot of difference to me too. I agree. I would want Grant on my team too.
So he didn't break the top 10 in single game record for receiving yards. Again, going back to 2007, because I just like want to go back and replay all these games. Two players from 2007, well, Crabtree made it twice for a single game, most receiving yards in a game. He made it twice for 2007. Once against Rice, he had 244 yards. But then Crabtree and Amendola make it on the top 10 list in the same game. I'll let you guess which game it was in 2007.
2007. Oh, gosh. It was the Oklahoma State game?
Yeah, like, okay, so Michael Crabtree had 237 yards. Amendola had 233.
Oh, that blows my mind. I'm looking at it right here, and I don't believe it.
They had nearly 500 yards receiving between the two of them.
I don't believe that. That can't be right.
Like, I remember Crabtree having a game, and then, of course, dropping the game-winning touchdown.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was the game that got our coordinator fired.
Yeah, Lyle Setensich, whatever his name is, did not make the trip back.
Nope.
Or he did separately.
Yeah, Crabtree had a heck of a day and then caught that one pass or missed that one pass in the breadbasket in the end zone.
But it hit him in the hands in the end zone.
I mean, it couldn't have hit him any better. And, you know, hey, he's had a heck of a day. That's we couldn't stop anybody. So I don't think anyone ever laid a whole lot of blame on him, really. But man, no,
it was like that game like we had against Oklahoma a couple years ago. It was just back and forth. It was like a 49-44. Like you had to score in every possession in that game.
I remember that, but I do not remember Amendola having a lights out day himself. I remember Crabtree just going nuts, but not Amendola too. Mm-hmm.
and so that 2007 Oklahoma State game would have had like a Zach Robinson at quarterback. I don't remember their running back, but he was also really good. Dez Bryant would have been on Dez that team.
Was playing.
So you're like, okay, the Oklahoma State was pretty stacked that year.
Yeah. That was a heck of a game. That was a, I mean, even losing it, that was a game that would almost be enjoyable to go back and watch just because it was just all offense. It just, that's all it was.
Okay, so I have Michael Crabtree, Jakeem Grant, 1-2. You have Crabtree and...
I'm not going to change orders. I'm just going with you. That way we're not going back on points. I have Grant too.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at earlier. I know that Adam and I differed on this, and I can't remember who he liked better than Grant, but that's who I want it too. I'm with you.
Okay. Who is a third for you?
Jason Morrow.
Yep.
Jason Morrow is on my list. We talked about him a little bit already, but he's number two on receiving yards, and he was a tight end. And he had 1,352 receiving yards in 2013. So,
which is, you know,
number two on single Crabtree. Season. I mean, sorry.
Yeah, behind Crabtree, but everybody like he's behind him by 600 yards.
Yeah,
but he's also number two single season.
Yeah, he was one of those guys that just, gosh, you couldn't bring him down. They tried to screen him. They couldn't screen him. He just had his way with you a little bit. And he was dominant, especially in the inside. So he's no question. He's on there.
Okay. Yeah, he's on my list as well. So we have Crabtree, Grant, and Amaro. The other guy I was thinking about putting on was Wes Welker.
Yeah. I think this might have been where Adam and I kind of went back and forth because I think he wanted Welker and Amendola, and I was thinking we got to get one or the other. And that's where Grant came in for me. But I agree with Welker. I have him on my list as well. All that to say.
So we have four of the same?
Yeah, we have four of the same, but my fifth one, I can almost guarantee you it won't be on there. And it was Adam's idea, and I really like it. Do you want me to go ahead and say what it is?
Yeah, because I'm thinking it's not Amendola. I'm thinking about players you've seen. There's a couple that it could be, but I'll let you go ahead.
Lau Leong.
Nice.
That's who I would pick. Because just think about, I mean, the high jump ability.
He's second in career touchdowns.
Yeah. Yeah. Because all they had to do was like Potts could just blindfold a ball roughly towards the corner and Leon would catch it almost every single time.
And then we would hear about how they've been playing football together since kindergarten.
That's right, over at Abilene.
And because it was that season where I think Leong had like 20 or 21 touchdowns, and every time it was, well, he and Potts have been playing together since they were children.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, he had he's number, well, he's tied with Crabtree number two on single season touchdowns. He had 19 touchdowns in 2010, and like you just said, he has 32 career, which is number two behind Crabtree, who has 41. So Adam brought that one up, and I immediately thought, yeah, that's good. Because I just remember how clutch that was and how everyone knew it was coming. I mean, that was like all we could do. That was all we could do, except maybe get it to, was Amaro? Yeah, Amaro was around then, but, not in the red zone so much. But yeah, that was just throw to the corner to Leon, and he's going to climb the ladder and get it, man.
Yeah, Amaro wasn't there for any of Leon's years.
He wasn't. Well, he was there in
2010. He came in 2012.
Ah, crap. You're right.
I think.
Because Potts didn't throw to Amaro. Yeah. Anyway, that's my number five. Who do you got?
Going with that same kind of clutch, reliable receiver, more recent than Leong is Eric Ward.
Oh, man.
It was that same kind of mentality. We got, to the 40, and we just knew, okay, Dahee's going to throw to the end zone to Eric Ward. And he did it a lot and was successful fairly often. I mean, he's tied for 8th on the single-season touchdowns at 12, so not like he put up a 19 touchdown season. But 2012 also had a Jakeem Grant, maybe an Amaro on that team. I'm trying to look at who else was on that team at that time.
No, that's a great pick. I really like Ward. He was, I think during that time, especially his last year, I think he was my favorite player on the team. He was so fun to watch. He would make some incredible catches. I remember some one-handed catches.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was against Baylor, maybe.
Against Baylor, and there's one against Kansas, too, where they went for a review for, I feel like, forever.
Oh, forever, yeah.
Because he came down, on his side with the ball.
Yeah, did he have possession? Did he juggle it? Whatever. And
he did have possession. Touchdown. Yeah.
The guy, the way he could contort his body midair, I love that pick. That's a great pick. Because he was a blast to watch, and I felt like he, I don't know, I don't feel like he got all the credit he deserved playing here. He was a really good receiver, and he worked really hard.
Mm-hmm. And he's coaching now.
Yeah,
he's coaching high school.
Yep. Yeah, I follow him on Twitter. I really like keeping up with what he's doing. So. That's a great pick, man. I completely support that one for sure.
So our five wide receivers are Michael Crabtree, Jakeem Grant, Wes Welker, Jason Morrow, and then you had Lyle Leong for five. I had Eric Ward.
Yep.
And if you're going to be trying to separate the team, we're looking at Ward versus Leong. That's impossible.
That's impossible. That's a tough one.
Because both were... You throw it in their direction, they're going to catch it. Leong was more of a jumper. Eric Ward was, if I'm going to put a hand on it, I'm going to catch it.
Yeah.
He had hands of glue, it seemed like.
Well, and Ward, I think Ward was stronger, too.
Yeah,
he could get a little bit more separation.
He was mean.
Yeah, if he needed you away from him, he'd make it happen.
Yeah, and that reminds me, who was it? Was it Darren Moore that could have been called for offensive pass interference every time the ball was thrown to him, and he hardly ever called for it?
Yeah, because he was always very open.
Yeah, and he showed up on some of these single season, single game lists.
Man, I forgot about that guy. I remember, he's the next Crabtree. That was just kind of all the stuff floating around him, and that's not fair to the guy. No one's going to be the next Crabtree.
So he played opposite of Eric Ward in 2011, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
They play on opposite sides. So he made the top 10 for single game receiving yards at 221 versus Texas State. I think he also hurt himself that game.
Yeah.
Eric Ward did not make the top 10 list there. Like I said, Amendola's on that list. Crabtree's on that list twice. Fulani's on that list.
I really liked Joel Fulani. I got to see him play quite a bit. He and Jarrett Hicks were,
mm-hmm.
they were there at the same time. I remember them.
He's on the, so Jarrett Hicks made the single season top 10 list for single season receiving yards. He and Carlos Francis were tied at 1177. So.
You know what I like too is number one on receptions is a running back.
Well, because there was a lot of screens in those years.
Leach loved to throw to Torian Henderson, man. That was just, all right, dump it off. 302
That's funny because nobody else on that list is a running back. Everybody else is a receiver.
No.
But he led, he still leads all-time career reception numbers.
Yeah.
He played 2002 to 2005.
Yep. And he's above Wes Welker, so.
By, what's that, 40?
Mm-hmm.
Three?
And then Eric Ward, who's number three, so.
And then Jakeem Grant's four.
I think we put together some pretty good teams, man.
Yeah. I would pay to go see this team play.
Yeah, I would. I'd go to that school.
Hey, you did. All right, so we got a question. This one actually came from my brother. Which team has the better position groups, 2017 or 2018? Then he wants us to give reasons for optimism or pessimism. So I don't think you can just say one team has the better group top to bottom. I think if you look at individual groups, you can say, okay, 2017, it's to be determined on quarterback. I don't know. Depending on the day, you can convince me either way. Receivers, I'm going to lean 2017. Running backs, I'm going to lean 2017. Offensive line, although they're all returning, I would lean towards 2018 because of the experience. Defensive line, overall depth and experience, I would say 2018 over 17, even though you're losing Mike Thomas.
Mike Thomas is such a huge loss to me. That's the only one I disagree
with. Nice pun.
Yeah.
It's a big dude.
He's a very large loss. That's the only one I disagree with you so far. You've got Joe Thomas. I think that's, or is it Joe Wallace?
Joe Wallace, Nick McCann, yeah, Roderick Washington.
You've got some guys that can fill his shoes, but man, I don't know. I really like how he played last year, so that's my reason for pessimism on 2018. I think Mike Thomas he's going to be a guy in the middle that you're really going to miss.
Mm-hmm. Linebacker, I think because of the group returning and experience, 2018. Defensive back, experience, group returning, 2018. So defense, I think, is all 2018 for me. Offense is all 2017 minus the offensive line. Yeah. But then again, the quarterback and running back are kind of being TBD.
Yeah, those are some pretty tough ones. Hey, what about special teams?
Push. I'm not excited.
Spencer did not make a happy face.
I would say 2018, with it just being sheer hope that our kicking isn't as bad as it was in 2017.
Yeah, I'm hoping we can trot someone out
Knock
there
on
that,
wood.
Yeah, that can make a few more than every other field goal.
Ugh, I don't know one thing about that.
that's where we got to start, man. We got to be realistic.
So, yeah. Then we had another question. Well, do we answer reasons for optimism or pessimism? I think you did.
And you did
defense.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say defense. I think it's primarily on returning experience for my optimism for the defense. Pessimism on the offense is that you don't have a known quarterback. You don't have really a known running back. I mean, you've got Dalian Ward, who was really good 2 years ago. Trey King was okay, but it was his first year out of a JUCO. They typically, if junior college players are going to make a transition, it's going to be their second year. And then you're in the running for that graduate transfer from Cal. So you could have a really good group of running backs that you could really rely on and lean on if you're going to be running the ball a whole lot more. And not that 2017 was all that great at running back, but you're relying on some guys to take a step that you just don't know that they can or will. Offensive line, obviously, like the defense, banking on experience there.
Yeah.
So we got a question from Red Raider Reset 1. If Dakota Allen or Jordan Brooks goes down with an injury, what kind of shape do you think our D will be in? I think if you lose one, you might be able to
function.
I wouldn't I wouldn't say cover it. I would say you'd still be fairly decent and functional because of Rico Jeffers. He's a guy that really came on last year, and he's as a third running or linebacker. Gosh, as a third linebacker, you feel pretty good. Like if he has to come in and give a break for either one of those guys, you don't think there's going to be that big of a drop in production. Obviously, you'd want to keep Allen on the field as much as you can. Jordan Brooks is really good. Jeffers is pretty good. I think those are probably those two are probably closer together than Jeffers is to Allen. I don't think your defense collapses if you lose one of them. If you lose both, that's a different story.
Yeah, if you lose both, it's not good. That's very, very bad shape. But yeah,
because the success you found at linebacker last year obviously was set up a lot by your improved defensive line play. But don't let that, you know, take away any talent, or don't let that, you know, persuade you to think that Dakota Allen or Jordan Brooks aren't really great linebackers.
Yeah.
And then you also ask, will either one of you be going to see Infinity Wars on opening day?
I will not. That's a no for me. Yeah, same here. I did see Black Panther recently, but I haven't seen Ant-Man. I haven't seen Spider-Man Homecoming. I haven't seen Thor Fraggle Rock. I haven't seen...
Is that the actual name, or did you just make that up?
It's either Ragnarok or Ragnarok, and whichever one I think it is, I'm always wrong. I get the consonants mixed up on the mythical town or planet, but that I only say that because I'm so behind. Oh, I haven't seen Doctor Strange either, even though it's on Netflix. So no, I won't be. I feel like I should be a little bit more caught up before I at least try to watch that one. And man, to be truthful, just. I'm overloaded with Marvel Cinematic Universe stuff right now. That's why I can't even keep up with them. So,
yeah, we probably talked about this last time or in a previous episode. I stopped. I was not able to keep up after like Iron Man 2. So it's been several years.
Well, and I did go see. I think it was 2012. I did go see. I think that's the first Avengers. On opening, at least opening weekend. I don't think it was opening day, but I did go see it. I mean, I would go see them as soon as I possibly could, and then, man, they just really branched off. And probably right around the time Guardians of the Galaxy came out, that was when I couldn't keep up with them. I mean, and I saw that one, but that was kind of around that time where it seems like, oh man, there's just a new one. Every 3 or 4 months, it seems like. So now I won't be there, but that doesn't mean I'm not gonna take a huge swipe at people who are or who enjoy it. But and I probably would be there if I was caught up or at least plan on seeing it in the theater.
Yeah. So we don't go to the movies a whole lot. We actually went tonight. I went to go see A Quiet Place finally.
Oh, tell me. Yeah, you want to talk about that some?
It was different. It was a little different than what I was expecting. Samantha and I were discussing this on the way home. I think what threw us both off is, so if you don't know storyline, story plot, sorry, there might be some spoilers here. You're following John Krasinski and his family in this apocalyptic time where aliens have basically taken over the planet.
That's probably a huge spoiler. Well, that's probably a massive spoiler.
If you've seen the trailer, the movie, then that's then not you'll a know. No. If you've seen the trailer, you know what I'm talking about.
Good Lord, man. Well, how does it end?
Well, I'm not going there. Well, no, because as part of the problem is you're just kind of dropped in. Whatever happened to start this whole sequence has already happened. You don't get to know what it was. Then the storyline, you follow this family. And then the movie just cuts to black. Like, there's no resolution. You don't see what happens.
Ooh.
So, like, there's no starting point in the movie. There's no ending point. You're just kind of dropped in for a little chunk of time. And without going into actually spoiling parts of the movie, there's not really a good place to start or end, like, in terms of plot or that kind of thing. You know what I'm trying to say? Like,
yeah, it's just
there's no momentous action or activity that starts the movie, because whatever happened, you don't know what it is. Yeah. Sorry, spoiler. That's probably a spoiler. I don't know. Maybe not. I'm not going to tell you what the aliens are, the
don't
creatures, or whatever it is.
Don't get Spencer to start talking about a movie within like 2 hours of seeing it on a podcast, because he'll just be like, oh, well, and this. Oh, and he was dead the whole time. And this.
Okay, this isn't, you know, Sixth Sense.
Or... Oh, dude, you totally spoiled. Oh. I'm just kidding. But then, how old is that movie now? Is that movie 20-something years old now? I've got to look it up. Sorry.
It may be. But like I said, like, it cuts to black and not at a part where there's a reasonable expectation for the movie to end.
Oh, okay. So it just kind of... It's like The Sopranos.
Yeah. Like, there are things that you would want to know after the movie ends that you're not given.
Sixth Sense... if the movie was a person, it could join the armed forces and or buy cigarettes.
It came out 2000?
No, it came out in 99, so it's actually
19
years old, yeah. Ugh, wow.
So, to answer his question, Infinity Wars, no.
Yeah, me neither, but not, you know, not for any, like, huge reason, mainly just because I don't know what's going on. And I know there's so many little tidbits that I feel like I would miss out if I just showed up to Infinity Wars without seeing, you know, those four or five movies I listed off a while ago. So,
all right, and we got one from Jonathan at John1443. Why are there so many different polls in baseball, and why can't Tech public relations stick to using the same one week after week instead of just using whichever poll we're highest in? So I can't tell you why there are so many polls, besides it's not as well regulated as basketball or football, where they go off of one or two. I know there are basically any media publication that does anything around college baseball will put out their own poll. And Texas Tech is known or has a tendency to just say, hey, we're ranked whatever, depending on whichever publication has them the highest.
Hmm.
So it's not like we're always going to use the NCAA, we're always going to use the RPI, we're always going to use Baseball Today or Baseball America or D1 Baseball, whatever all those publications are. So I get Texas Tech using the one that they're highest in. As long, like, my thing, I don't know if they do it or not, is just be consistent in if your opponent is ranked, use that same ranking.
Yeah. I mean, I totally get it. It's completely just for face value. So for anyone going through Twitter and sees a graphic, you know, number 3 Texas Tech taking on whoever, sure, they may have been number 5 and in a different poll, but whoever sees that is just going to immediately take that in. I totally get it. It's I'm sure most all other schools do it. And it's definitely just for face value, just for the people who are just scrolling by and going, oh, man, oh, these, you know, this is number 3 versus number 7. Let's stick around and watch that game or whatever.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I think at this point where Texas Tech is ranked when you're in your top 5, there's not a whole lot of discrepancy in the rankings. You may be 3, you may be 5. Whereas, you know, Oklahoma this past week, I think they ranged between 14 and like 24. So there was a huge gap in like where they were ranked depending on who you looked at. So that one kind of like, okay, it's obviously like you're kind of shaking your head and like, we're going with the ranking that has us at 14, even though most of us have us at like 18 to 20. You know, but Tech is, you know, you look at all in the 3, 4, 5 range.
I kind of think and I may be wrong on saying this, but I feel like in football, they do the same thing now until the playoff committee meets. Mm-hmm. And then that usurps everything. I think if you're in the AP poll at 7 or if you're in the coaches poll at 11, you're going to be the number 7 Texas Tech Red Raiders. So I think it's just kind of a common thing to do it. But yeah, like you said, Spencer, you've got to do common ground. You can't, you've got to use the same poll for your opponent and approach it that way.
And the issue with, like, if you're going to go back to college football as an example, so, like, ESPN's going to have their own ranking system.
That too,
that,
yeah.
That game is going to be, okay, Texas Tech 10 versus a 12 Oklahoma. I'm just throwing this out there. Whereas those rankings will be different depending on which media company you look at. It may be AP is Tech is 12, Oklahoma is 14, or flipped, you know, you're 12 and Oklahoma is 10. So, yeah, I kind of wish there were just like a central ranking body, but then you're going to have all kinds of politics with centralizing that, and not really worth it.
Right, and the good thing is a lot of the way baseball seems to work out, and believe me, I'm new to following Texas Tech baseball, but or just college baseball in general, is that it has a lot of built-in ways to prevent just complete overrating and high votes. It seems to just have a lot of ways to weed that out through the regionals and super regionals and so on. I mean, you're going to play a lot of teams. You're going to play teams from schools with like 4,000 people, teams with schools with like 60,000 people, and they'll play each other. And whoever wins is whoever wins. And it's a series, so it's not just like a one-and-done thing. I think they have a lot of built-in checks and balances there. That's what I was looking for when I started this ramble, that kind of keep it from just being, oh, well, these are the top blank teams in the country going to Omaha according to the, the arbitrary ranking systems that we employ.
The other thing I think that lends itself to that for baseball is that so much of baseball is it's relying on stats, which is
very quantifiable.
An easier metric to apply universally, whereas like in football, you can't say, we're going to take the number one offense. Well, and what metric are you looking at number one? Like total yards? You're looking at efficiency? You're looking at points scored? If you look at, baseball, like there's not an offensive system that says, we're going to grind out, a 17-point game and we're going to win, whereas another offense is going to put up 60 points and lose.
Yeah. Texas Tech.
All right, last question from Kyle Lang, @sports_KyleLang. Hypothetical question. If Texas Tech could be guaranteed a national championship once every 10 years in the sport of your choice, at the cost of every other sport being at the bottom of all Power 5 schools, would you take it?
You want me to go first?
Yes.
Okay. If he would have said 5 years, I would have taken it in a heartbeat. For football.
A national championship every 5 years?
Every 5 years. I would have taken it in a heartbeat, and then everyone else could just be at the bottom of everything. Sorry, Dan. Sorry, Mike. I know that's going to hurt, but that's what I would do. Every 10 years, though? No, I wouldn't do it. 10 years isn't enough. But the argument could be made, and I don't want to stumble on what you're going to say because I don't know what you're going to say, actually, but the argument could be made, if you win one and you're guaranteed one every 10 years, who's to say
more?
Exactly. And you're going to get the recruits that saw you win that one. And maybe it'll be just kind of like a Bama situation where the rich just get richer and there's no way of stopping it. What do you think? How would you answer this one?
Well, on a related kind of hypothetical, okay, are the other sports bottom of all Power 5 on only the year that you win the national championship?
Oh, good. Yeah, good point. Because if that's it, then yeah.
Because if your football team wins a national championship every 10 years, but your baseball team can reload, in the middle of that 10-year cycle, is that okay? Or your basketball, or name any other sport you want. I think it's an easier yes. I still think I would lean towards yes because a national championship in football is, I don't know, it seemed like it's almost unattainable for a school like Texas Tech, especially in its current state. You look at like how can we ever get to the competing with an Alabama for a championship type?
Oh, well, okay. Well, let's reload it and think of it this way. Great question, Kyle, because we're going all over the place with this. All right, so the way I read it, I'm going to say two things. Sorry. First, I think the way I read it is that he means like for eternity. You pick the one sport that's going to be guaranteed a national championship every 10 years, and every other sport is just cellar, bottom, you know they go mm-hmm. 1-17 in conference play or whatever in basketball every year or something. So the other question is football going to be around enough for that to be worth it? What if we take this hypothetical question and then 2038 rolls around and there's no more football and just the rest of our sports suck and there's nothing we can do? I mean, I would be kind of leaning towards if you thought of it that way and about the chance of football just not existing in maybe 15-20 years, at least at the collegiate level, I would change my sport to basketball. Basketball would be the one I would focus on, but then I still don't know if I'd take it. I still don't know if I'd take the risk of being guaranteed it. What do you think if you look at it that way?
If every other team is garbage for eternity, and we're trading that in for a national championship every 10 years, and football never goes away, I may be able to be persuaded into that.
We've got a lot of qualifiers for this hypothetical here.
I would have to just find secondary teams for baseball, or like I'm just going to be looking at the MLB, or I'm going to just look at the NBA, you know, not look at college athletics that we're not excelling at.
Who else would know this? Like, who else would know that? That's a cool thought. Would you?
I would say Alabama, but they're competing for a national championship more than once every 10 years. The rest of their sports are pretty ho hum, and they're not you know bottom of the Power Five. But like basketball, I mean, since Avery Johnson was their coach, they've been a little bit better. But
go Spurs, go, man!
I haven't heard anything about their baseball team.
Yeah, I think I had an angle to take that and I totally lost it.
Or like a Clemson.
Yeah.
I know nothing about their other sports.
Man, I lost it. Just like I lost that fourth or fifth favorite cafeteria food on the other podcast. Anyway, it's gone. But that's a great question. I remember what it was now. I finally remember. I wanted to know from Kyle if anyone else knew that I made this decision on behalf of all of Texas Tech Athletics. And, I mean, like, is this a who am I talking to? Am I just talking to some like sports deity type person, and they just come to me individually and present this hypothetical to me, and then no one else knows unless I tell them, and they don't believe me anyway, but they might after like year 7 or 8 and Tech is headed to the national championship and every other sport is the worst in all of Power Five athletics and has been for 7 years.
Yeah, there's no hope of turning it around.
Yeah, no hope. I don't know. I got a kick out of this one, man. That was good.
That was good. All right, so what did we learn this week besides Kyle has good hypothetical questions?
I learned two things. First, Dave Grohl kicks so much ass. He just comes out there. He's the lead singer of the Foo Fighters, man.
Okay.
And he just comes out there. He screams at you for the entire time. My friend Adam and I have been to see quite a few different concerts throughout the years, and we were both kicking ourselves that this was the first time we'd seen the Foo Fighters in concert. So that was really a blast. If you guys are into rock at all, check them out. Check them out. Like it's some what
I sound like it's like a new or unknown band.
I sound like such a tool. Yeah, check out this little band called the Foo. Anyway,
I've only been around for 20 years.
Listen to me, but don't listen to me sometimes. But yeah, they're really a blast in concert, and I can't stress that enough. The other thing I learned was that a 5-gallon bucket of sand weighs approximately 13 pounds. And I removed approximately 10.
Wait, I thought you said it was 67.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. It's 1 gallon weighs 13 pounds.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yes, 5 gallons weighs almost 70.
Yeah, a 5-gallon bucket of sand weighs almost 70 pounds. And I know this because I removed about 10 5-gallon buckets worth of it from my yard yesterday after that nice big dust storm on Friday. So, the only the strong survive in Lubbock, especially in spring, and that tradition still continues.
Not that this is anything new or earth-shattering. Meteorologists in Lubbock don't know what the heck they're talking about. Friday, they were like, all last week, they're preparing us for these big storms that are going to roll through on Friday. Heavy rain, heavy thunderstorm, hail, high winds. I think it rained at our house for 20 seconds. That's it. And then again, we had this forecast for tonight going into tomorrow, rain. There was a storm in the area. It like literally went around Lubbock. Like it hit us on the west and hit us on the east. Like it literally split around the city.
It's
like,
that has happened so many times in the last year. It's really odd.
And it's just been a really weird spring too, because like it's been cool enough that I haven't had to run my AC in the house yet, and we're almost in May. But also like it'll spike up to, you know, 80 or 90 and then drop down back to 60 and then warm back up into the 80s and 90s and drop back into the 60s. Like it's fighting. There's a fight going on to keep spring in Lubbock, which if it means we're gonna have high winds and this no rain nonsense, I would just rather get us a summer. But
I think it's living here that has me firmly in the camp that spring is by far the worst season. And I think I've said this before, and I just want to keep reiterating it, because it's terrible. It is terrible out here, man.
So whenever anybody, you know, asks me what my favorite season is, I've never said spring, and it's not going to be I'm never going to say spring if I'm living in Lubbock. This is the first year where I actually was like, man, this kind of sucks. Like, I've never had, like, an issue with the wind. This year, I'm like, I am fed up with it. And, like, we haven't had, like, any dust storms, per se, and not even, like, one of these big haboobs that roll through. It's just been, like, pretty constant. Like, we'll have it two or three days a week where winds get in the 50s and 60s. You're just like, this is miserable.
It's just red. And it's just red. The sun is just kind of a glowing orb that you know is somewhere in the redness.
And then you get, you know, 700 pounds of sand in your yard.
Yeah, yeah. I really don't think that's an exaggeration, y'all. I mean, I spent over 4 hours yesterday with a rake and a leaf blower and a hoe and a broom and just started scraping all that out of the yard, because I went to Dallas, I went Friday morning, and so I missed all of this. And I pull up on Sunday afternoon, and my front yard looks like it could be a bad lie for your golf game. I don't play golf, so
me neither.
I don't know. I bet no one noticed that I don't play golf the way I worded that. But man, it was disheartening. And usually when the dirt blows out here, there's a lot of new construction. Usually when the dirt blows out here, it gets all on my back porch, and I think I've griped about that before. And I fully expected to open my back door and just see, you know, piles of dirt all on the back porch. Well, the wind was doing something so crazy and so weird, it actually cleaned off the back porch. So that's when I knew something was weird.
That's strange.
It was like I had gone out there and swept it and used a leaf blower. I mean, it was pristine. I was okay, well, we're dealing with something different. This is some sort of weird, swirling, crazy wind. I don't even get it.
Yeah, with the way that our house lays, we get swirling winds on our back patio. So on days like Friday or this weekend when it gets kind of windy, I open the door and it just reminds me of the movie Interstellar, where they're like having to flip over their plates on the table because it just dust settles on everything.
Did you know that? Did you ever see the Ken Burns documentary, The Dust Bowl?
Mm-mm.
Okay, I like Ken Burns stuff. Anyway, that's a great little documentary. And the people that they're talking to at one point where they're interviewing the guy that looks like he just has one eye. They're kind of older people and they're talking about just how dust was everywhere. Those are real people who lived through the real Dust Bowl. And that's footage from Ken Burns' documentary. And they intertwined it into Interstellar. And I was like, oh man, these people actually know what
what dust is.
Yeah, they truly know. And it was that documentary, if y'all want to know about some dust, y'all check that out. Because there was so much static electricity in the air, they were dragging chains in their cars so that their cars would stay grounded. And that way you wouldn't shock the complete hell out of yourself when you got in and out of your car. I mean,
it was something nuts. I haven't experienced this any other time in my life, but like, this spring, I've noticed if I go to like a fast food restaurant and I hand somebody my credit card, if my elbow is touching the door, I'm going to get the shock of my life.
Yeah.
Like when I hand over my card.
Yeah.
Because of the static on the car.
Man. Yeah, I didn't know. I don't think I've had that experience. I've had some pretty bad ones just at the house because we have a couch that's pretty susceptible to that. Especially if I'm wearing some sort of like Under Armour type shirt. Mm-hmm. Kind of that.
You've sweated on your couch.
Yeah, yeah, and you stand up and you just know, you can kind of feel it, and then you go hit a light switch and just pew. I've shocked my daughter really bad, never on purpose, and she would just kind of shudder or shake a little bit, and you're like, oh, I'm so sorry, I was just coming to pick you up, I had no idea I was charged like this because we live in this desert dune-like planet.
We've noticed some extra static in the house too with the new carpet.
Yeah.
That we'll go and reach for like the light switch, and the light switch is plastic, the plate is plastic, but the screws that hold it in aren't. So like you'll get close to hit the switch and just it'll get you on your knuckle. You're like,
yeah. Argh. Sometimes you'll see the arc sometimes too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that'll do it for us this week on the 23 Personnel Podcast.
We covered a lot of ground.
We did. We went from football to dragon chains. For Michael, I'm Spencer. Thanks for joining us. We will catch you maybe in 2 weeks, maybe next week. We'll let you know. All righty. Everybody have a good week.